Hello, Frozen.net readers. Chris Shore and Jake Barnett back for another SmackDown audio review, all access version. This is for the SmackDown that aired on July 22nd, 2011, taped July 19th, 2011 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And this is the all access version. Normally, this audio is reserved exclusively for .NET members, but we thought we'd bring it to you guys today, let you get a sampling of some of the audio we do around here, and encourage you, if you like what you hear, consider signing up for the members page. We do a lot of audio on the site each week. We do an audio review of Raw and SmackDown from WWE, as well as Impact Wrestling from TNA. Jason Powell and I also do a Q&A audio each week where we answer member questions about wrestling and some just non-wrestling fun questions. Mine's usually on Wednesdays. Jason's is on Fridays. Every Wednesday or Thursday, we're also getting a new audio show from Mr. Barnett here with me today, and Will Pruitt, who also writes for the site. Jake and Will get together each week, and they do a .NET countdown where they look at the best and the worst of professional wrestling each week. It's pretty new to the site, but these guys are doing a great job. Definitely worth checking out once you sign up. And then every Thursday, Jason and I do our flagship show, the .NET Weekly, and that usually runs between 2 and 3 hours. We review the news of the week, as well as offer up some new news items. A lot of times, first-run news items there. This week's show was exceptionally good. Got a lot of good stuff in there about things going on behind the scenes, changes, where Hunter is really taking over and it's not a storyline situation, as well as an update on some developmental wrestlers that you might be interested in keeping an eye on, update on Jeff Hardy's court date, just a lot of good stuff in this week's show. And, of course, all the audio that's there, all the back audio that's there, interviews with different people, Michelle Dayton, who had been on WWE's Tough Enough, as well as interviews with different creative writers who have worked with WWE. Just a ton of audio there for you guys, besides the new stuff that we're building each week. So if you like what you hear today and you'd like to see more, head on over to ProWrestling.net if you're listening on iTunes. And once you're there, or if you're already there, look in the upper right-hand corner for the .NET member sign-up page, and that will give you all the information you need. Just $7.50 a month to try it out, but I think once you find that you listen to everything, I think you'll find that you like it, and you'll want to sign up for that annual plan. It saves you $2 a month, just $5.50 a month gets you access to all that audio. Not to mention that you also get access to the .NET ad-free version of the site, as well as the members forum and the members blog pages. Just a lot of stuff there for you guys to check out. We definitely recommend that you head on over, click on that .NET member sign-up page, and get all the information there. And come on over and join us. Send us some Q&A questions, and we'll include you in the audio next week. So, welcome to any new listeners who are checking it out. Jake, I'll bring you in right now, and we'll talk about the SmackDown against Taste in your hometown of Minneapolis, Minnesota this Tuesday. Jason Powell was there and came back and told us that it was an okay show, didn't think it was a great show, and I think that's what translated on the television, that we had a fair to decent show. But some strange things. We were promised one match with Cody Rhodes versus Ezekiel Jackson and an Intercontinental title match, and that didn't play out. Then we got a weird Cody Rhodes video. I mean, it was a great video. It was just weird that we got that instead of the actual advertised match. So let me go ahead and bring you in and ask you, were you looking forward to this SmackDown? There was so much coming out of Money in the Bank on the Raw side with CM Punk winning the title and going away, and then what were they going to do there? And then we had the tournament start to crown a new WWE champion. And then, of course, we all know how it ended with Triple H coming in and storyline removing Vince as the guy running the day-to-day operations of the company. And so SmackDown was kind of shuffled to the side a bit. But we did have a new World Heavyweight Champion in Christian coming out. And do you think that SmackDown was lost in the shuffle, or do you think it was able to stand on its own? And were you looking forward to the show?
Well, I was, and I agree that the World Heavyweight Champion kind of gotten lost in the shuffle, especially with how the Christian and Randy Orton storyline has kind of lost its luster, especially over the last couple of months. It just hasn't been the high-profile program that it was at the beginning. But we had the surprise Money in the Bank winner in Daniel Bryan, and we also had some pretty good advancement of the Mark Henry storyline. And so, despite my feeling that the world title feud definitely has its shortcomings. I was excited to see Brian and Henry progress and see where they went on this show. So those were the primary reasons I tuned in, and I was looking forward to see what they had to say.
All right, and the show did open cold with Randy Orton sitting in the middle of the ring, and for those who did not see Money in the Bank or have not heard for whatever reason, of course, Orton lost the title to Christian on Sunday, but lost it in a disqualification, which, of course, normally doesn't happen, but it was built into this, that match, because the storyline, of course, being that Christian had his lawyers kind of sneak that that language into the contract that he would lose if that Orton would lose the title on a disqualification, and he spit in his face. Christian spit in Orton's face, and that led to him kicking him in the nuts and costing him the title. And so we knew we were going to get some sort of thing about that. I'm not a big fan of the whole Randy Orton is crazy storyline, but we knew we would revisit that, and we did. Orton was just sitting in the ring, and it opened with, "My name is Randy Orton." I actually sit back to the TV because you already know that. So I thought it was just kind of strange that he would open with that. I didn't know at first if he was going with a 12-step program type thing for anger management or what it was. It was just weird. But he said that there were a lot of things going on in WWE, but one thing that was not going on was this show until he finished his business with Christian. And they showed the video that kind of had some still shots of what happened with Orton losing the championship by kicking Christian. Christian's music hit. He came to the ramp, and they bickered back and forth for a while. Christian taking the position that, you know, you can't be mad that he used superior intellect and that he used all of his skills to be able to win the championship, that he outsmarted Orton, that Orton couldn't be upset about that. Yeah, I thought it was a very CM Punk-style promo insofar as it reminded me of when CM Punk cashed in his Money in the Bank on Jeff Hardy that first time, and you know, he was still a babyface at the time when he cashed it in, and it kind of turned him, and he was like, what did I do? You know, I did the same thing that every other guy who has held this briefcase before me has done, and so I kind of felt like Christian was working from that same place, you know, saying, it's not my fault, I did everything I was supposed to do, you know, don't blame me because I was able to win. Then he kind of did turn really heel and say, you know, plus I'm not listening to any of these idiots anymore. These people are no longer my peeps and that sort of thing to try to get some heat. Orton at this point said that Orton demanded a rematch that he wanted it tonight. Christian said that Orton could have a rematch, but he had to go to the back of the line, and there were other people who were waiting, and he was going to talk to his attorneys right now to make sure that happened. Orton stopped him and said he didn't need to talk to his attorneys. They could settle it right here, and went to go up the ramp. Christian waited. Christian's, you know, a foot from the curtain to go to the back, and he's just standing there while Orton storms up the ramp. I don't know why he didn't go to the back. But we had the entire ref crew come out with Teddy Long and Teddy Long's music playing. Teddy stopped Orton and says, you know, look, you're already booked in a match tonight with Kane. You cannot have your rematch tonight. I expect you to be the bigger person and walk away from this. Orton acted like he was going to, and then pounced on Christian and you know, kind of beat on him a little bit until the refs broke it up. And Christian was upset, yelling at Teddy Long. And Teddy said, "Well, you know what? You're going to quit yelling at me. And if Orton has to compete tonight, you've got to compete tonight against Ezekiel Jackson, and you've got to do it right now." And sent him to the ring for their match next. But before we get to that, Jake, I got to tell you, I was really concerned listening to this promo because Christian seemed to be getting zero reaction from the crowd. And according to Jason Powell, who was there when it was taped, he said the same thing, that Christian was just not getting the reaction from the crowd that he has in the past. Have they done him too much damage at this point? Is he dead where he stands?
Well, that was my concern going into the pay-per-view, and I mentioned it in my predictions for Money in the Bank last Sunday, where, you know, they kind of set up this angle where he really was pushing the idea that he wasn't going to try to win clean. He was going to try to win by pissing off Randy Orton to the point where, you know, Randy disqualified himself. And then they went ahead and they went through with that, and I think we're now seeing the result of several months of losing clean to Randy Orton and then following it up by, you know, having him, you know, lose in one of those BS stipulation finishes where the title changes hands but Randy never gets beat. And, you know, we're sitting here with a character that never really got off to a good start. They never really gave him much of a chance. You know, he survived this, you know, this far merely because he is that talented on the mic and he can get that kind of stuff over even when, you know, even when it's not that great. So I think the reaction we're seeing now is a reflection just of how poorly he's been booked thus far. And I think they took a lot of heat off of him with all those clean losses in a row. And then the finish at Money in the Bank didn't do him any favors either.
Yeah, I mean, I really think they thought they were doing the right thing here. And they, you know, it looked like they were, you know, honestly trying to keep him hot and just, you know, having the title on Christian instead, or excuse me, on Orton instead. And it's just not working out for him at this point. Like you said, he's lost clean, lost clean, lost clean. And the only way he's been able to beat him is to spit in his face and have a sneaky, according to storyline, clause built into the contract to allow him to win that way. And as Jason said, he's kind of sneaking back into that creepy little bastard role that he had played before when he was in WWE as a heel. And it's just not where he needs to go. It's just not working for him right now. And the heavyweight title is his suffering, and he's suffering because of it. And he deserves better than this. But on the flip side of that coin, we have, you know, the crazed anger management problem, Randy Orton again, which I was never a fan of, even as a heel. While he was kind of working with that idea of anger management and whatever, or having rage issues, he had a great run over on Raw. And I mean, that was when he did the whole bit with the McMahons, and he ended up hitting that DDT on Stephanie that had all of us just, you know, running around in circles. It was so good. But I never always thought the kind of core of that story didn't really click with me. What about you? Do you like this Randy Orton who has rage issues?
Well, I mean, I didn't mind it when it was new and when he was a heel, because I think it fits that, you know, if he's going to have some kind of anger management problem, that it works as a heel character, because, you know, that kind of explosive violence and rage can be used in some compelling ways, and I think they did that with the McMahon family storyline. But I'm not a big fan of it in his current character, because, you know, it kind of makes the entire storyline appear a little bit more ambiguous, and that's not the direction they need to go with either of these characters, because Christian is obviously, as we just covered, struggling to get over as a heel. And Orton has been able to get better face reactions, and, you know, since he's been doing this anger management stuff, he's actually kind of out-healed him as far as violence. And I don't think that's the direction you want to go if you're actually trying to legitimately get Christian over, because Orton already dominates so much of this SmackDown show that letting him use heel tactics is kind of unfair when you know that the other heels on the show are already struggling. So I'm not a fan of the character in its current form, no.
Let's book this out just a little bit and take it to SummerSlam. I think at this point we can assume. I mean, we don't know for a fact, but I think it's at this point that they're going to book this out to SummerSlam and have that be where Orton gets his rematch. And let's assume that happens. Does Christian have to win there for this to be saved in any way, shape, or form? I mean, I don't know if I want it to go past SummerSlam, and a Christian win would certainly do that. But if Christian's going to have any real future as a legitimate contender at the top, does he have to win at SummerSlam?
Yeah, and I think he actually has to get a pinfall. I don't think you can do another stipulation victory. I mean, you might be able to get away with, an interference finish, because we all know that heels of WWE never win clean. But, they have this Sheamus storyline that they're working with. They have this Mark storyline that they're working with. You know, they have some elements that they can introduced into this feud, you know, even as a kind of secondary storyline, to try to work some magic with the match and the finish at SummerSlam. Because as it stands now, I mean, I'm not sure that the crowd is all that interested in seeing another Christian Orton one-on-one title match on pay-per-view. I think they're going to have to go in a slightly different direction, because I think the crowd, like we saw in Minneapolis here this past Tuesday, they just aren't buying into Christian as the incredible heel world champion. And I think even Orton's reaction kind of came a bit, because he didn't seem to get the kind of explosive crowd reaction that we saw other places.
Skipping ahead just to the end of the show real quick, we did have Orton and Kane, and it was the final match of the night, and there was some fallout from that as far as Kane was concerned. Did they need to do something with Christian there? Did they need to have him run out and attack Orton, or was that a lost opportunity by not revisiting that feud at the end, or did it not matter at all?
You know, I thought that match was good enough to stand on its own, so I don't think that the interference would have helped. I mean, Christian did get a clean win, as we'll talk about in a few minutes on the show. I'm surprised they didn't give him a little bit more time on the mic, either, you know, backstage or, you know, in an interview segment or something like that. But they do have quite a few weeks ahead of them to build towards SummerSlam, so I think he'll have plenty of opportunities to climb out of this hole that he's in. But it needs to start soon, that's for sure.
And you're right, Christian did get a clean win. That was after the commercial break. We had our first match tonight, Christian defeating Ezekiel Jackson in a non-title match for either man at 10 minutes and 49 seconds. To be quite honest, a stinker of a match. I mean, it just was not very good. Had a commercial break in the middle of it. I wish it had been longer. Zeke is very limited in what he can do, and they've been able to work with that limitations to kind of get him over. But, you know, here you've got him working with a top-level guy, and, you know, it's champion. Well, there's a lot wrong here. One is champion versus champion, which should be very, very special, but it's not because the titles have been diminished so much. And then you've got a guy who can really go like Christian with a guy like Zeke who really can't go, and they just weren't able to mesh and work well and really make this. I mean, it was believable. It just wasn't very good. It was just kind of sleepy. As I wrote my report, I had to be up early yesterday and had gone to bed late the night before. And I found myself wanting to doze off in the middle of the match, and that's never a good thing when your two champions are wrestling and I'm falling asleep. We talked briefly about this match, and I know you were not a fan of it as well. Just, you know, give me your thoughts on it, because there's just not a whole lot to say about it other than it was bad. Christian got the clean win, but no, I mean, he didn't gain anything coming out of this, I don't think, at least. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really say that he gained any steam. I mean, like you said, Zeke is very limited in what he can do in the ring. And, you know, he's best when he's on offense and you know, the guy that he's with can do him some justice with some selling. But he didn't really get much, you know, as far as major offense in this match. I mean, we saw some, you know, some clotheslines and a body slam and, you know, some stuff like that. But for the most part, everything in this match kind of looked clunky. You know, there was a spot on the outside where Zeke pushed Christian into the announce table, where it looked like Zeke had, you know, kind of pushed him like you would push open a door, and Christian ended up having to fly backwards and fly into the announce table. And, you know, it looked like that spot in TNA where Christian ended up slamming his head into their apron while Scott Steiner was left holding his hands in midair. You know, it just didn't look good on TV. And, you know, that's kind of this match in a nutshell. It just never got out of first gear. Neither guy looked very good. And then, you know, we've talked about this before, we had the worst finisher in wrestling close the match, and it looks even more ridiculous when Christian is doing it on one of these large muscle-bound guys because he has absolutely no finish or no leverage during the setup to the finish, and then, you know, he gets the clean pin, and Zeke is left having to sell something that looks impossible if you were to try that in real life. So the whole thing just didn't sit well with me. Being that it was champion versus champion, like you said, it should feel special. But, I mean, from start to finish on this thing, I just kept wondering, like, you know, this must have been thrown together at the last minute because these guys just do not look comfortable together.
Yeah, I actually said in the past couple of weeks about ROH likes to finish matches sometimes with just a bunch of kicks, and the idea is that the person who lost was just finally overwhelmed by the number of kicks or strikes or whatever, and I call it the worst finish in wrestling. You're right, I stand corrected. The kill switch is the worst finish in wrestling because it's supposed to be a finisher, and yet it looks to be, like I said, there's just no leverage. It looks to be the weakest move. I mean, the guy falls on his face. I understand that point, but just the setup to it, like I said, especially with a guy as big as Zeke, when he was turning him over, I was like, this is awful. This is really exposing the business. So Zeke just looks like he could just sneeze and shake him off. It's so bad. Back to the commercial, we had the Cody Rhodes hype video. And just for fun, I'll tell everybody, I got an email from someone who claims that they know why the advertised match between Zeke and Cody didn't happen, was because the new head writer for SmackDown, there's been some changes on creative, and the new head writer thinks that Cody Rhodes should be an enhancement talent. And for those who don't know what the term enhancement talent is, those are the guys who lose every week to make sure the other guys look really, really good. You know, in light of this video, it just was a very funny email that I got. But I will say that I am confused as to why they didn't use Cody in this spot. We don't know why at this point. He did come out during the dark match main event, make a run out and interfere there. So he wasn't hurt, or at least not hurt bad enough to not be able to run out. But I thought they did a really neat job with this video. They kind of started with the old dashing Cody Rhodes and him walking around smiling, and they had really upbeat music, and then they showed the 619 with the knee brace from Rey Mysterio, and then how he's kind of descended into this kind of madness thing. I thought this video did him a ton of good. Did you like it as much as I did?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed the video package. I mean, you and I have been fairly high on the Cody Rhodes character since its kind of birth after that 619 injury ankle for WrestleMania. So, yeah, I've been a fan of what Cody's been doing. You know, my only criticism of him is that the character really hasn't progressed much. But you know, that could be just as much creative as it is him. So hopefully, you know, with a package like this, he'll get a little bit of a chance to rebuild and maybe reassert himself in the coming weeks. But I was
I thought for anyone who was new to SmackDown, it was a good way to really reintroduce you to the Cody Rhodes character. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I mean, he's definitely one of the top heels on the show. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So it's good that he's going to get an opportunity to kind of expand on his character, because it is necessary, because I don't think a lot of people get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great character, and we've talked about it. Like you said, we both like it, and he just needs to progress at this point, and some of that I'm sure falls on creative, and hopefully that's what we saw here was the beginning of progression, because I think it's a great act. I do think it's a main event act, quite honestly. I think it's something he can ride to the main event, and hopefully we'll see something soon. There's a lot of good stuff on SmackDown. They just got to get all the parts plugged into the right place at this point. And speaking of good stuff, Michael Cole stood in the ring and introduced the SmackDown Money in the Bank winner, Daniel Bryan, who was the big surprise this past Sunday when he pulled the briefcase down. I was watching with a group of wrestlers, and when he started climbing the ladder, and we're all sitting there going, and we're looking around, you know, and going, wait, he's going to win this thing? Really? They're going to put the briefcase in Daniel Bryan's hand? This is unbelievable. And, you know, he did win, and it was a great moment, just a big surprise. He was the guy that I gave, of the ones who I thought could legitimately win, he was the guy I gave the least chance to. And just a really cool moment, and as a fan of wrestling itself and not just sports entertainment, it was really exciting to see that, and hope that we're going to see more of him as he builds up in the future. But Cole, of course, brought him out, and, of course, there's been some heat between those guys. Ever since he debuted on NXT, Cole said in his opinion Bryan's win was a fluke. Bryan said that Cole had buried him ever since he had shown up on his first day, and so his opinion didn't matter to him. And Cole just kind of went on and dressed him down, said that Bryan likes to strut around and act like he's Superman and he's Mr. Morals and, you know, he's this upstanding guy or whatever, but when it came down to it, he was going to do what everybody else with that briefcase had done, which was wait until a champion was laid out in the ring and to cash in and try to win. And so, you know, he said, and so you'll always, your win then will be a fluke, and it will always be a fluke. And he just really kind of dressed him down. I thought Cole did a pretty good job here of setting up where Bryan went next. And Daniel Bryan went on and kind of defended himself, said that nobody deserved anything in this business because Cole said he didn't deserve to be the champion. He went through some all the different things that happened to him, said that he had detached the retina in his left eye and had lost some of the sight there, that he'd been kicked in the head so many times. He had lost hearing in his left ear, said that he had to stand in front of his mom and watch his mom just cry and beg him to leave the business because of all the injuries he had, but he wouldn't do it. And he had made his way here. He had earned his way there. And he said that Cole was right. He did not want his title win to be a fluke. He wanted it to be something that he had earned. So he was going to be the first Money in the Bank winner to ever say that he was going to cash in at WrestleMania 28 in the main event. And we've been joking about this a little bit because he said he was the first to do that. And, you know, Kennedy, when he was Mr. Anderson now in TNA, when he was with WWE, he, you know, said he was going to cash in at WrestleMania. He had an injury angle that caused him to take the briefcase away from him with Edge, and it got all screwy from there. But as someone pointed out, we'll know Daniel Bryan is the first person to announce he was going to cash in at WrestleMania 28. So I guess there's that. But he did say, you know, he was going to put it off until that point and going to be in the main event. Before we get into the implications of that, Daniel Bryan's big hole in his total package coming into WWE has been his mic work. He's just not a great worker on the mic. He, you know, what he does in the ring is beyond compare, and he does have great charisma and interaction with the crowd when he's working in the ring. You know, the crowd really can get behind him. He can get them going, but when he's on the stick, he's just not very good. Or certainly not in the elite group is what I would say. He's not terrible. We've certainly seen much worse from WWE guys. So while he's not on the elite level, he's just, you know, he does okay. What did you think of his performance here? And do you think that Cole, say what you want about him, Cole is very smooth on the mic and knows exactly what he wants to say and goes out there and delivers it the way it needs to be delivered most of the time. Do you think that Cole helped him out by being that foil that he could work against?
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, and it would have meant a lot more if Cole still had all that heat he would have had a couple of months ago. But I think Cole was able to successfully antagonize a decent promo out of Bryan here. I mean, we all know Bryan has his struggles on the microphone. You know, it gives plenty of time for him to be kind of reintroduced to the audience and hopefully be taken a little bit more seriously, you know, by your average fan as somebody who could compete for a world title. And, you know, part of that's going to be him, you know, taking the necessary steps to improve on the microphone. And, you know, the more opportunities he gets, the better he's going to be. And I thought, you know, tonight was, you know, definitely not in that elite group of promos, like you said, but it was good enough to get the point across. And Cole definitely helped get a better promo out of him than we probably would have seen if he was just sent out there by himself.
Let's talk about the implications of this. Let's assume for a moment that WWE is actually going to be patient and they're going to wait until WrestleMania to pull the trigger on this cash-in. Is that a problem insofar as we know we're going to get Cena Rock, and Cena promised earlier that it was going to be for the WWE Championship. And even though he's not the champion right now, and CM Punk's got it and he's away and all that good stuff, I think we all believe that, you know, they said it. They did a couple of moments that, you know, we're going to see in a video package down the road that hypes that match. I mean, I just believe it's going to be for the championship. That being the case, and if Bryan cashes in WrestleMania, what's the point of the Royal Rumble at this junction? Have they done some damage here, or are they going to have to do something silly and have him cash in a triple threat? You know, are they in trouble by going this route because of the way they've booked everything up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, they have a little, you know, there's a lot of, things they're juggling in the air here. They have, you know, they have two Money in the Bank briefcases floating out there. You have the guaranteed title shot for the Rumble winner. And, you know, I suppose they could change the stipulation, you know, some Rumble time if they really had to, but that You know, that doesn't seem like something that Vince would do, but I think you're going to probably see, you know, there's been rumors flying around about, you know, Punk having a match at Mania with Triple H, and you have The Rock and Cena, and so that, you know, that SmackDown World title match, you know, perhaps doesn't need to have the star power that you normally expect from a world title match. And maybe that's where they, you know, they figure they can play it safe and put somebody like Bryan and maybe somebody else who isn't an established main eventer in that spot, so that they can, you know, they can put them out there and see what they can do on the big stage and progress from there. I mean, maybe the Rumble winner will be somebody who, you know, perhaps, you know, isn't really an established main eventer as well. And having two of those guys in the main event isn't exactly a bad thing either. So I look forward to seeing what Bryan is capable of, but I think you're right that there's a lot of things up in the air that need to be answered before, you know, we can really say if this is a good idea long-term or not.
Yeah, you know, I'm concerned because we know that, you know, whenever Cena makes these sorts of statements, that they always almost end up coming true. And if it ends up that they are not wrestling for the WWE Championship, because quite frankly, they don't need it. I mean, they don't. It's not going to help the championship in any way to have The Rock versus Cena for the title. Nobody's going to believe at that point. I think it actually hurts that match, because I think there's a much greater possibility of Rock going over if Cena's not defending the championship than if he is, because we know that Rock is not coming back full time. So, you know, I think more than anything, having that belt on the line in that match actually hurts that match. So if they've got it on someone else, and not Punk if he's going to face Hunter, but, you know, just someone else, and the Rumble winner comes from the Raw side, I think they can save this. And, you know, you can always dismiss what Cena said before is just, you know, hyperbole and bravado because he was champion at the time, and all that makes sense. But, you know, they've got some problems they can easily get out of it if they're willing to do the things they need to do and just ignore that statement that Cena made that it was going to be a title match between he and Rock. And if they get away from that, I think they can save it. But as of right now, based on previous WWE history, I think that they've painted themselves into a little bit of a corner here. But after Bryan made his announcement, or as he had just announced it would be WrestleMania 28, Heath Slater's music hit, and he came out and had a mic with him, and I have no idea who handed that guy a mic, but whoever it was shot. He said that only Daniel Bryan would pick the biggest stage for his grandest failure. He said that Daniel had failed ever since he got to WWE. He had failed at NXT. He had failed when he was in the Nexus, and he said he was going to fail tonight whenever he lost to Heath Slater, and that led us to our second match of the night, Daniel Bryan defeating Heath Slater at 10 minutes and 51 seconds. Jason was hot on this match, and or not hot, I'd just say he thought it was a good match, and what little bit we saw of it was okay. The problem was we had a lot of it in commercial, and it's one of those times where WWE has a good match, and where they put the commercial kind of hurt it, I thought. It was good. It just wasn't as good as I thought it could be. Slater can work. I mean, I've said that for some time now. I just hate his character. He doesn't have that it factor. I think he showed it tonight on the mic. But yeah, I mean, he can work in the ring, and they did some good spots here and had a little fun with it, and certainly put on a little bit of a spot test at the end to lead up to the finish. The finish did come with Bryan hooking in a guillotine. I called it something in my report. I don't remember what it was now. Goji Clutch, I think. Because I don't know these moves. I'm still learning them, the MMA-style moves. But it was a guillotine chokeout, which I found interesting that they, you can't choke in certain holes, but you can in others. It's just funny how as wrestling has started to absorb some of the MMA stuff, how some of the traditional rules have changed to some degree. I thought it was an okay match. It was, a B if you're going to rate it anything on that sort of scale. I know you liked it a lot. So tell me what you thought of Slater on the mic, and then tell me what you thought of the match.
I even in my report last week when Slater cut his promo on Justin Gabriel, I think Slater's kind of a doofus. I don't like his character in the slightest. And, you know, it's to the point that, you know, it's almost how I felt about, you know, X-Pac when he had that, X-Factor faction with Albert and just incredible years ago. It's just like, you know, this guy has just overstayed his welcome in my mind. But on to the match. The match kind of reminded me of Daniel Bryan having a decent match with himself and Heath Slater just kind of being in the general area. I mean, all of the good spots in the match were all Daniel Bryan. It was competitive at points, but for the most part, there was a definite, difference in, ring quality between the two. I mean, Bryan can work with anybody. Slater, like you said, I mean, he can work a decent WWE-style match, but, I don't foresee him ever, getting to that main event level with that current character, so it's hard for me to buy into a lot of his ring work. But, I thought Bryan was great here. Slater ended up selling for him well, and we had the clean finish after about 10 minutes, and I think we might have saw maybe 4 minutes of this match, but it was decent, not great, but I think it helped advance Daniel Bryan's character as a submissions guy. So hopefully we see more of that going forward, and we see Slater get rebuilt, because this one man rock band thing is just way past its welcome.
A video package recap the Mark Henry and Big Show match for Money in the Bank and kind of some things leading up to that. Then we were sent backstage where Matt Stryker tentatively asked Henry, said he had one question for him: when will the destruction end? Henry said never. He said that he had felt something when he heard Big Show in the ring on Sunday, that he felt something that he had never felt before, something that he couldn't describe, but he just started saying word, power, violence, strength, and just listed a whole bunch of things and said, if it sounds like I'm talking about me, I am. And then they cut away. And I got to tell you, I was blown away. I was sitting there after it happened going, was that really Mark Henry? That's the best promo. I swear, I think that's the best promo I've ever heard out of that guy. I was completely blown away by what he said there and how he delivered it. And then, of course, with what happened later in the ring at the end of the show with Kane, I'm really, really, really digging Mark Henry's character at this point. Are you?
Yeah, I mean, I've taken a lot of crap in the forum for sticking up for Mark Henry lately, but I think he's been far and away the best that he's ever been. And I don't know if he got some promo coaching before, that promo he gave last week with the Big Show and following it up tonight with this one, but this is the best Mark Henry we've ever seen. And I don't know if he's actually starting to buy into himself now and starting to get comfortable with the character, but the guy is doing everything right now, and I think that that deserves respect, because after a lot of stops and starts with Mark Henry over the years, it seems like this time things are really clicking for him, and I hope he continues to take off.
Yeah, like I said, I was just impressed with what he did last night. After commercial, we had a replay of the ending of Raw this week with Hunter relieving Vince McMahon of his duties. And you guys covered it in the countdown. Jason and I covered it in Raw Review and in .NET Weekly. So I don't want to spend more than just a second on this. But I just wanted to ask you a question. Because as I was rewatching it, something hit me that didn't hit me before, and it was as Hunter started delivering his speech and telling what all had happened, McMahon immediately got emotional. And this time, when I watched it live on Monday, I thought it was really good. This time, watching it back, I thought, that's really strange. Why would Vince start crying as opposed to arguing? Pleading his case, if you will, or trying to make his point, or going, no, you're not going to do this to me. You're not going to take over. Why did he just capitulate and start crying? Do you see a problem with that as well, or do you think I'm just, overanalyzing it because I watch too much wrestling?
I can see your point that you expect more fight out of Vince McMahon just because of the character that we've seen him play over the years. But I think the progression of this Punk storyline, you know, where you know, Punk had been berating him for a couple of weeks about, you know, you don't know what's hot in 2011, you know, you don't know what connects with fans anymore, you know, you've lost touch with your company and you know, what it means to be in WWE in 2011. And, you know, then, you know, Hunter, you know, I think Vince kind of started getting emotional as soon as Hunter, you know, started referring to his questionable decision-making and stuff like that. So I think that was perhaps Vince's character kind of coming to realize that maybe he isn't the be-all and end-all of WWE in 2011. So, you know, I watched the segment again last night, and I was tempted just to fast forward through it, but I watched it just to kind of get to kind of absorb it again, just to make sure that my earlier reaction to it wasn't too tame. But you know, I stick by what I said in the countdown, which was that I thought Vince McMahon was excellent there, and I thought Triple H hamming it up was pretty bad. But I think McMahon definitely sold that segment like it was real, and Hunter sold it like it was a joke. So that's just kind of my take on it.
Yeah, it's so funny, because I liked the way Hunter worked Monday night. I thought it was pretty good. But anyway, like I said, we beat it to death, so we will move on at this point. We had a video recapping the Wade Barrett and Sheamus, Wade Barrett attacking Sheamus at the end of his match last week after Sheamus lost to the now-suspended Sin Cara. And then had our third match of the night, Wade Barrett fighting Sheamus to a double countout at 4 minutes and 28 seconds. This was just basically a brawl. There were, I guess, a couple of little moves in there, but mostly it was just a brawl that ended up on the outside. And I missed the end of this, the very, very end of this. I got distracted by something else, but the last thing I saw was Barrett throwing Sheamus into the post. Is that how it ended, or did Sheamus come back with a bro kick from there?
Nope. They had that little bit on the outside that you mentioned, where Barrett ended up getting the better of Sheamus, and then tossed him into the ring post, and then Barrett picked him up and tossed him back in the ring, and got back in the ring and tried to set up for Wasteland, but Sheamus ended up slipping out and pushing Barrett off to the ropes, and then delivering the brogue kick, which. Barrett sold like he had just gotten hit by a train, so that actually looked very good on TV.
I hate I miss it. I need to go back and watch it. It was just one of those things where you know, you got four kids and stuff happens, and you miss something sometimes. So, but all right, well then let me ask you this. Jason said that the live crowd really popped for Sheamus. I don't think it came across as loud on TV as he kind of made it to be. Maybe that was edited out. But that, you know, they gave the crowd no incentive to cheer for either guy. This is a heel-on-heel match. They gave the crowd no incentive to cheer for either guy, and the crowd organically chose Sheamus to kind of be the babyface here and to cheer for him. Do you think Sheamus has a good future as a babyface, and do you think it might be coming sooner rather than later?
I definitely think the crowd is trying to turn him in a way, because you know, even going back a couple of weeks to when they had that opening promo on SmackDown with all the Money in the Bank competitors, and Sheamus came out with a chair and cleared everybody from the ring. I mean, that crowd was dead until he appeared, and then it was just a huge reaction for him. And then we got a similar reaction to his offense during the pay-per-view. That spot with Sin Cara being won, and, you know, a couple other ladder moments where he was close to reaching the belt, the crowd really came alive for him. So, you know, if they continue with his current trajectory, I think the crowd is going to turn him face at some point. But if they, you know, I think there's still an opportunity to really cement him as a heel if he goes back to some of his really dastardly tactics. I think they can go either way at this point. I think it just depends on, you know, what kind of booking strategy they're going to take with him.
Of the two, is Sheamus the guy that, I mean, they need baby faces. They are short baby faces on SmackDown. So of the two, is Sheamus the guy you would turn face?
Yeah, out of those two, definitely. I think Barrett, you know, is too weak as a heel at this point to really do an about face. I think he would need to get over with the crowd to the point where, you know, somebody like Sheamus is right now before you can really make a meaningful face turn out of it.
Backstage, we had Kane in his red light cutting a promo. He said that he had too much humanity in him recently, and he was going to kill the humanity that was in him, and that he would prove once again that he was the devil's favorite demon. You know, just the kind of standard normal stuff from Kane there. And that brought, after commercial, that brought us to our final match of the night, our fourth match, Randy Orton defeating Kane in a street fight at 23 minutes and 32 seconds. A match that was very, very, very good. The finish came when Kane had brought a chair into the ring and hit Orton with it a few times, was going to do the tombstone on it. Orton slipped out, escaped the choke slam attempt again. They kind of battled for a second, and then Orton hit the RKO on the chair for the victory. There was a moment earlier in the match when they each hit their finisher and each guy kicked out. That was just great. I mean, just really, really, really good storytelling there. And the crowd was hot for it at that point. But, you know, if anything, the big news coming out of this match is the status of Randy Orton. And Jason talked about this in .NET Weekly and how there was a spot. And he said, well, you know, Orton got his foot caught in the hole on the announce table and it kind of toppled over. And I had a totally different thought in my mind as to what happened until I saw it. Orton didn't get his foot caught. His foot went through the hole to the bottom, and his thigh and knee were pinned in there as the thing flipped over. And Orton popped up and kind of laughed it off and said, ah, no. And then dropped an F-bomb that was edited out, but you could read his lips. That was a scary, scary spot. I want to talk about that first because the match was just, you know, the match didn't do anything for either guy insofar as advancing any type of real storyline for either one. But it was just a fun match and a good match to watch. And, you know, we could talk about the match, but the post-match stuff is what's important, I think, and that thing with Orton. Orton was able to finish the match. He did also go on to work the dark match main event. But did, when you saw it, did you freak out as much as I did? As a guy with bad knees, when that table flipped over and he reached down and grabbed his leg, I thought, oh, my God. My wife screamed, oh, my God, he broke his leg. I mean, it was brutal looking. Did it bother you as much as it did to me?
Yeah, that was an ugly, ugly spot. And I don't know, you know, if Randy just kind of forgot with, or maybe he lost his place on the announce table visually because he looked like he had his eyes trained on Kane. But yeah, it definitely looks like one of those moments where, you know, oh, this is going to end up in that WWE injury, do not try this at home reel, you know, where people really get hurt because, you know, that looked like one of those spots where he could have, you know, dislocated a knee or, you know, had his quad roll up on him or, you know, at the very least have a really, you know, high ankle sprain or something like that because he didn't see where he was stepping and then he stalled the way to the floor. And, you know, all of his weight came down on that one knee and the whole announce table kind of fell. You know, it just looked extremely painful. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if he would have just laid there for a while, I might have felt better about it because it's just one of those situations like, you know, sometimes when I, you know, when I've gotten hurt in the past, I've kind of popped up real quick and tried to shake it off like nothing happened. And I think, you know, when you do that, it's kind of a more of an indicator that you're more in pain than if you would just laid there for a while. So, yeah, I definitely thought he might have been legit hurt. You know, it didn't sound like he had any complications in the dark match from Jason's report. So I have to assume that he's okay, but that was definitely must have been a very scary moment for Orton and everybody backstage because he definitely is the centerpiece of this show.
Yeah, you know Vince McMahon was watching that when it happened and just thought his world was just crumbling around him when he fell over like that. But it looks like it's probably just going to end up being a bruise is my guess. I went back and watched it a couple of times and kind of watched what happened. I think the fall, the table flipping over and him kind of slamming his leg inside of the hole is what was more painful than anything else. And it probably just ended up being a nasty bruise. I mean, I'm guessing, obviously, I don't have access to Randy Orton's medical records, but just a hunch from watching the way things played out. As far as the match itself, 23 minutes, main event match. We didn't have a whole, we had four matches, and two of them went over 10 minutes. And then we had that 4-minute match with Sheamus and Barrett, but they brawled for a while afterwards after that. So, we had four matches of length, and something I just want to ask you quickly. They, you know, I caught a lot of flack from people for complaining about Raw on Monday, saying that it was a boring show. And complaining is a bad word. I just said it was just a boring show. And people were saying, well, no, it was wrestling heavy and yada, yada, yada. And my point was that my counterpoint to that was that you can't call, you know, 5 or 6 5-minute matches, whatever it was they had, you know, a bunch of really short matches wrestling heavy. You know, this show had less matches, but all of them went long. You know, of the two, which do you prefer? Do you like the idea of having less matches that go longer or more matches that go short?
You know, I would prefer just to get longer matches. But I know, you know, judging by the reaction on the forum to your assertion, you know, people definitely see those 5-6-minute matches as okay these days. You know, I guess we both, you know, kind of came into wrestling as fans quite a long time ago, me being when I was just a kid, and you know, you're just a few years older than me, but we both watched the era where, you know, a 10-minute match was pretty much, you know, your standard TV match. And TV main events could go 15, 20 minutes, and pay-per-view main events could go 30, 35, 40 minutes. So, you know, I'm conditioned to watch longer matches, and I, you know, I feel I'm able to better get into the flow of longer matches. But, you know, fans who came in this more recent era, you know, are much more adjusted to the 5-6-minute match length, so they might prefer that. But I definitely would rather see 4 or 5 10-minute matches on a 2-hour show than I would like to see 6 or 7 5-minute matches, because I don't think it does the performers justice when they just go out there and get a few minutes.
After this match was over, Orton was celebrating on the turnbuckle for his win, and Kane stood up. Orton was watching him. He stepped down off the turnbuckle and kind of just, you know, waited to see what Kane was going to do. Kane stuck his hand out and nodded, and they shook hands, and Kane, you know, kind of did the 2-handshake too as well, and really congratulated Orton and put him over, which, you know, was very surprising, considering his whole thing about trying to kill all the humanity that was left in him. Orton left the ring, and Kane was there left selling. And I was really confused at this point. I'm looking at the time and looking at what's going on in the ring, and I'm going, what in the hell are they doing at this point? And then we see Mark Henry is slowly making his way to the ring. He just very calmly walked out, climbed into the ring and stared at Kane. Kane made his way to his feet. He was selling a leg injury that was storyline. Orton had hit him with had worked the leg over on the stairs right after he actually hurt his leg legit. By falling to the table, Orton did a spot with Kane and worked his leg over on the stairs, even hitting his leg with the top part of the stairs at one point. But Kane, struggling, made his feet. He kind of smiled and shook his head at, or nodded at Henry, tossed his elbow pad into the audience, and then they went at it. Kane got in a couple of licks, but then Henry kicked him in the leg to put him down, hit the world's strongest slam on him, and then a splash. Drug him over to the corner and put the chair on his leg, went and got a chair. The announce team failed like little kids. That was really strange. They were like, we're out. I think even Josh Matthews was like, no, I'm done. And they just threw the headsets down and ran. And but Henry didn't mess with him. He just grabbed the chair, slid it in the ring, put it on Kane's leg, just like he had done with Big Show at the pay-per-view, and then did the kick-out splash from the second rope like he had done with Big Show, left Kane screaming and holding his leg in the ring to close the show with Henry yelling at him from ringside. Again, just another progression of Henry's story, and excellent job there. My only concern going forward, and I'll get your thoughts on all of this, is these sorts of things where the guy comes out at the end or at the end of a match, even if it's not the main event, and just leaves guys, you know, does one specific thing where, like, he's like this with the chair and the splash and on the leg. WWE tends to take those moments and beat them to death and just run them into the ground. And I'm concerned, we've seen it twice now, and I'm just concerned they're going to go too far with that. But it looks like Henry's just trying to take people out left and right. We talked about his promo. We talked about how impressed we are with him. Just your overall thoughts on the post-match stuff, and if you're concerned like I am that they might, not that they're going to, you know, overdo Henry, just overdo that one particular spot.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see your concern, and I hope they don't go that route because, you know, those types of moments should be saved for rare occasions. And, you know, kudos to both Kane and Big Show for being willing to put over, you know, Henry Monster on SmackDown because, you know, those two have always been, you know, the go-to monster characters for WWE whenever they needed them. And, you know, to have Henry handle them so easily, both, you know, on SmackDown and on the pay-per-view this last Sunday, you know, it really puts his character over as the definitive monster on the show right now. And I hope that's what they were trying to do, you know, is you know, have Mark Henry literally put out everybody else who would have a stake to that claim. And I was a fan, you know, of the way Kane sold it. You know, I was a fan of the way the Big Show sold it on Sunday. You know, and I think both of those guys, you know, deserve their props for being willing to put over Henry like in the way that they have, because they've both, you know, done a great job of that over the last couple of months on SmackDown and on Henry's trips over to Raw. So yeah, I was a fan of the way the show closed. You know, I think that spot, you know, if they don't continue to beat it to death, you know, can be, you know, a very threatening thing. And, you know, just having somebody put their leg inside of a chair, even if they don't go through with it again, you know, it invokes that memory and can get a strong reaction from the crowd. You know, everybody on the SmackDown show from, you know, the announcers to, you know, Kimmel to the backstage interviewers to Teddy Long, all appear to be paralyzed with fear when it comes to Mark Henry. And, you know, I think that's going to be the dominant storyline going into SummerSlam. You know, where is Mark Henry going to stop? And I think they push that forward pretty well on this show.
Last question, I'll let you get out of here. Obviously, if it didn't, you know, SmackDown didn't have the big moment that Raw had. But, you know, a lot of people, including myself, were critical of Raw leading up to that point. So comparing the two shows, who do you think had the better show overall this week, SmackDown or Raw?
Well, I mean, the end of Raw was obviously monumental in terms of WWE storyline. But from an overall show standpoint, I enjoyed the action on SmackDown quite a bit more. I thought Kane and Orton was probably the best match of the week by far on WWE TV. And Mark Henry was great. And, you know, Daniel Bryan was very good. You know, the only real clunker on this show was Christian and Jackson. So I like SmackDown from an overall show standpoint this week, and I would give it the nod over Raw just because I think the grand majority of the Raw show was pretty boring. And aside from that fairly newsworthy finish, you know, it doesn't really hold up to what the show delivered last night.
I absolutely agree. I thought SmackDown was the better show. Raw definitely had the better big moment, but as from start to finish over the course of 2 hours, SmackDown was more entertaining. So that is all the time we have this week for SmackDown Audio. Jake, thank you for joining me again, and thank you everyone who was listening again. If you liked what you heard today and would like to hear more of Jake and I on SmackDown Audio, or Jason and I on Raw Audio, or Will on TNA Impact Wrestling Audio, or the Q&A audios, the .NET Weekly Show, the .NET Countdown Show, and plus access again to the .NET ad-free version of the site, the .NET Members Forum, the .NET Members Blog Pages, any of that, all of that wrapped up together, head on over to ProWrestling.net, look in the upper right-hand corner, and click on the Members Sign-Up page and get all the information you need to have access to all of those things. Each and every week, we thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for your continued support of ProWrestling.net, for reading the site. Everyone, have a great weekend, and take care.